All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at something. It's a way of thinking about decision making.
Okay.
And it was initially proposed, I think, with human services licensing in mind.
Okay.
But I think the underlying principle really applies to any kind of binary decision.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about how to ensure safety and quality in human services.
Okay. Right?
And specifically, we're trying to figure out how to make sure that the decisions
right.
about who gets licensed and who doesn't are as accurate and fair as possible.
Right.
And I guess you could think of it as like looking behind the scenes at those crucial yes or no calls that really impact people's lives.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be digging into something called the uncertainty-certainty matrix.
Uncertainty-certainty matrix.
The UCM. And yeah. while it was initially proposed, as you said, with human services licensing in mind, the underlying principles, I think, are much broader, you know? I mean, I think any time that you're making a decision about a clear-cut outcome, whether it's, you know, did we succeed or fail?
Right.
Is it approved or rejected?
Pass or fail.
You know, this framework has something to offer.
Right. So, and to be clear for our listeners, this isn't just some kind of dusty textbook theory, right?
Yeah,
we're looking at
right.
a real forward-thinking research protocol.
Right.
It's a proposed framework, right? It's not actually been implemented yet.
Correct.
And they call it a blueprint
yeah.
to improve how these licensing decisions are made and verified.
Exactly.
And it's about bringing, you know, rigor and clarity to a field where getting it right really matters.
It absolutely does, yeah. And our, you know, one of our main goals today is to unpack this idea of the UCM.
The UCM.
And how it, well, how it grapples with the difficulties of making consistent and accurate judgments.
Yeah.
You know, because that's really what we're talking about here. And also to explore how the UCM could lead to better regulatory practices and ultimately better safeguards for the people who are relying on these services.
Okay, so let's unpack this.
Okay.
The UCM is built on something that might sound a little technical.
Right.
But it's actually quite simple. And you kind of alluded to it already.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2x2 table.
A 2x2, yeah.
Which is called a contingency table, right?
Contingency table, right.
So I guess you can think of it as like sorting items into four boxes based on two simple yes or no questions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the research that we're looking at here, it points out that this kind of table is already used to define a lot of the key rules for compliance.
In regulatory settings.
In regulatory settings, right?
So it's not a new idea.
No, not at all.
That's just a new way of applying an old idea.
Exactly.
So I guess the interesting thing here is that when we're looking at whether a human service provider meets the licensing standards.
Right.
It's a yes or no, right?
Right. It's often binary.
But either they comply or they don't.
Right, exactly.
There's no gray area.
No, there's no in between.
So at that initial assessment, it's pretty clear cut.
Yeah, it's either a yes or a no.
So think about it in your own life.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever had to make a decision where it was just like, is this task done or not done?
Yeah.
Or is this requirement met or not met? Yeah. That's the kind of black and white thinking we're talking about here.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that foundational level that we're working with.
Right. And this is where the UCM takes that 2x2 table, the contingency table.
And adds this other really insightful layer, which is uncertainty.
Uncertainty, right.
Right. So now there are existing ways to measure how much different people agree when they're making these assessments, right?
Right.
And that's called
inter-rater reliability, or IRR.
IRR.
Yeah.
But the UCM goes further than that, right?
Yeah, it goes a step further.
By addressing that, sometimes, even when people agree, they might both be wrong. Exactly, and that's a really important point. It's not just about agreement, it's about accuracy.
Right, and that makes perfect sense when you consider, you know, in the real world, you've got all these different licensing inspectors.
Right.
And they all have their own background, their own interpretations.
Absolutely.
And they're going out and evaluating all these different programs.
Right.
So it's, you know, getting everyone on the same page in terms of making those yes or no calls.
Yeah.
That's a real challenge.
That's a huge challenge.
And so it's not just about whether they agree with each other.
Right.
It's about whether they are accurately reflecting the actual situation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where the UCM is proposed as a way to kind of get a handle on this fundamental measurement problem. And, you know, the author of this research, who's been studying regulatory compliance for over five decades.
50 years.
50 years He observed a real concern within the field about how reliable the program monitoring reviews actually are.
Wow, 50 years dedicated to this.
Yeah.
That definitely lends some weight.
It does.
To this idea.
It does.
All right, so we've got this groundwork of binary decisions.
Okay.
And then we add this crucial element of uncertainty.
Uncertainty, yeah.
What is the uncertainty-certainty matrix?
Okay, so at its core, the UCM really just looks at two key aspects.
Right.
First, the decision that's made by the licensing body is a program found to be in compliance with a particular rule.
Okay.
Or not in compliance.
In compliance or not in compliance.
Right, so that's the decision.
Got it.
And then second, the actual state.
The actual state.
Of that program in regards to that rule.
Okay.
Are they truly in compliance or are they actually not in compliance?
Okay, and when you put those two things together.
Yes.
The decision and the actual state.
Yeah.
That gives us.
You get four possible scenarios.
Four possible scenarios.
Right.
Which, as you mentioned, are laid out in Table 1 of the research protocol.
Right. They're neatly laid out in Table 1.
So let's walk through these. Okay. So the first two are pretty straightforward, right?
They are.
These are where we get it right.
Right. Agreement.
Agreement. Right.
Yeah.
So we've got a case where the decision is in compliance.
Okay.
And the actual state is also in compliance.
Yes.
So that's a success.
Right. That's a clear success, a point of certainty.
Certainty.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that coin, the decision is not in compliance.
Okay.
And guess what?
Yeah.
The actual state is also not in compliance.
Right. Another correct call. Another point of certainty.
Another point of certainty.
All right. So those two scenarios where our assessment aligns with reality.
Right.
Those are what we're striving for.
Yeah.
You know, but as anybody who's ever had to make a judgment call knows.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get it wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's where the UCM highlights the two types of disagreements.
Right.
These are the areas of uncertainty.
Uncertainty.
In our decision making.
And so this first type of mismatch, right?
Yeah.
Is when the decision is in compliance.
Okay.
But the actual stake is not in compliance.
Right.
This is a
false negative.
False negative.
Right.
And it's kind of like a medical test saying you're healthy when you're actually not.
Exactly. Yeah. It's giving you a clean bill of health when there might be a problem.
And the second type
is
the opposite, right?
The opposite.
Decision is not in compliance.
Okay.
But the actual state is in compliance.
Right. That's a false positive.
False positive.
Yeah. So the test says you're sick.
When you're actually fine.
When you're actually fine.
And so both of these, obviously, are things that we want to minimize.
Of course.
But I think the UCM really highlights that false negatives in human services licensing are particularly concerning. And I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because a false negative means that a program that isn't meeting the required safety standards or quality standards is given a pass.
They're given the green light.
Right. And that's a really...
Right. They're incorrectly given a clean bill of health.
Right.
And that can have serious consequences.
Serious consequences.
For the people relying on those services.
For the people who need those services.
Exactly.
So we're talking about potentially putting vulnerable individuals at risk.
Absolutely.
Right. And while false positives are obviously also not good.
Right. We want to avoid those as well.
Right. They're not as
dangerous.
They're not as dangerous.
Right. And that's.
They're more about unnecessary burdens and things like that.
Exactly.
So the primary focus has to be on those false negatives.
To make sure that.
To make sure that the people.
Our clients.
The clients are safe.
Are safe.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got these four possibilities laid out.
And we understand that minimizing those mismatches,
right,
especially the false negatives, is super important.
It's critical.
So how do we actually use this UCM?
Okay, so the research suggests that the UCM can be a really valuable tool for validating licensing decisions.
Okay.
So, for example, many licensing bodies use key indicators.
Mm-hmm.
So these are specific rules that are thought to be strong predictors of overall compliance.
Got it.
And the UCM can help us evaluate whether those indicators are actually doing their job effectively. And you can see this illustrated in Table 2 in the research protocol.
Okay, so in an ideal world, if our key indicators are working well,
right,
then when we analyze the data using the UCM,
yeah.
we would expect to see a lot of agreement.
A lot of agreement, right?
Meaning the decision based on the indicator
mm-hmm.
matches the actual level of compliance.
Right, exactly. We would want those getting it right boxes uh-huh. to be heavily populated in the matrix, yeah. And the term for that is a high coefficient of agreement.
Coefficient of agreement.
Which we would want to be as close to a perfect score as possible.
As close to perfect as possible.
Yeah. And conversely, if all four boxes in our UCM are roughly equal,
yeah.
that would tell us that our key indicators
not very useful.
Aren't really telling us much.
Not telling us much.
About the true state of compliance.
It's like flipping a coin.
Like flipping a coin, yeah.
50-50.
Exactly.
And I guess one of the really interesting potential applications of the UCM is that
yeah.
it can help us spot bias.
Yes.
Right.
This is huge.
Especially in how individual inspectors
mm-hmm.
are making decisions.
Yeah. That's one of the most powerful aspects of this matrix.
So if we consistently see
yeah.
a certain pattern in an individual inspector's results.
Right.
Like let's say... they're always marking programs as in compliance.
Yeah.
Regardless of the situation.
Regardless of the actual situation, right?
The opposite.
Or the opposite, yeah.
Right. They're consistently...
always finding non-compliance.
Finding non-compliance.
Right.
That would be a red flag, right?
That would be a red flag.
For potential bias.
Potential bias, absolutely. And the research protocol gives some really great visuals of this in tables 3 through 8.
Okay.
And they really paint a picture
right.
of how these different patterns can manifest.
So the way those... agreement and disagreement cells are distributed.
Yes.
It tells a story.
It tells a story, yeah.
So if you've got a balanced diagonal pattern,
right.
then that suggests...
a reliable, unbiased assessor.
Reliable and unbiased.
Exactly.
But if it's horizontal or vertical,
right.
like the decisions are skewed
in
one direction or another,
yeah.
that's a problem, right?
That's a problem.
And they give examples of what they call positive bias.
Right.
Where the assessor is maybe tending to always find compliance.
Always finding compliance.
But yeah, and negative bias,
yeah.
where they're always...
wow. leaning towards non-compliance.
Leaning towards non-compliance.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a...
it's like a visual report card
right?
for decision making.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And, you know, the thing is, this isn't just about individual inspectors either.
Right.
The UCM can also highlight biases that might be present in the licensing standards themselves.
Right.
So, you know, maybe a particular rule is poorly written.
Yeah.
Or it's being interpreted differently
yeah.
across the board.
Yeah.
And that's leading to these skewed results.
That makes sense. And then they also talk about
yeah.
how even random results
mm-hmm.
where all four boxes have the same number of entries.
Yeah.
That's not a good sign either.
Not a good sign. It suggests a real lack of consistency.
Right.
And that the relationship between the decision
mm-hmm.
and the actual state has broken down.
It's broken down.
Yeah.
And all of this underscores the need, I guess, for ongoing monitoring.
Absolutely.
Right. We need to be looking at our data.
Yeah.
And making sure.
We need to be able to detect if these biases are emerging.
Right.
Or if our decision-making processes are becoming unreliable.
Right. And then I guess this kind of analysis can lead to like more training.
Absolutely.
Or adjustments in.
Adjustments to the assessment method.
To the assessment methods.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So we've seen how we can use this to check the validity of our tools, right?
All right.
And the reliability of our assessments.
Yes.
But I guess there's another proposed use for the UCM.
Yes.
Which is differential monitoring studies or DMM.
DMM, yeah.
And this sounds like...
this is about tailoring our oversight.
Okay.
Based on a program's past performance.
Right. So if a program has been good in the past...
yeah.
We're not going to watch them as closely.
Right. Exactly. We're going to focus our energy on programs that mm-hmm. have maybe a history of struggling mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. compliance. Or maybe they've been identified as being at higher risk.
Got it. So we can... kind of allocate our resources.
Allocate our resources wisely.
More wisely.
Right.
Okay.
And the UCM framework can be adapted to create what's called a differential monitoring matrix,
oh.
or DMM, which is illustrated in Table 9 of the research.
So what's the key difference between
the main difference?
This DMM and the original UCM?
Is that the DMM
yeah.
refines how we view the actual state.
The actual state.
Right. So instead of just in compliance.
No.
Or not in compliance,
mm-hmm.
it categorizes programs into a high group.
Okay.
Generally those with a solid track record of full or substantial compliance.
Full or substantial compliance. Okay.
But then a low group.
The low group.
typically programs that have had a significant number of violations.
Right.
And the decision side stays the same.
Okay.
We're still looking at whether a specific rule is found to be in compliance or not in compliance during an assessment.
Got it. So the DMM helps us analyze how specific rules perform when we look at these two different groups.
Exactly. The high performers and those that have struggled. So, for example, it can help us see which key indicator rules are most effective at distinguishing between these groups.
Between the good and the bad.
The high and the low. And that's shown in Table 10 in the research.
So a good key indicator would be one where you have
high rate of compliance.
High rate of compliance for the high performing group.
Right.
And a low rate of compliance.
For the low performing group.
Okay.
That's what you would want to see.
And then Table 11 talks about risk rules.
Risk rules.
So how does the DMM help us with that?
So for rules that are considered high risk, meaning they directly relate to the health and safety of the individuals being served, we generally want to see very high rates of compliance, especially in that high performing group.
Right. We don't want to be messing around.
Exactly. Yeah. We want to be
extra cautious.
Right.
And in these cases, the DMM might reveal a higher number of what we call false positives in the high group.
So that means a high-performing program might occasionally get flagged as non-compliant.
Even though
they are generally meeting standards.
Right. And while we obviously want to minimize that,
our priority is to avoid those false negatives.
Right.
In the low-performing group.
Because that's where
the real danger lies.
Okay. So Table 12 brings up this idea of full compliance.
Full compliance, right?
And it seems that if we
define our high performing group as only those programs that achieve full compliance on all rules.
Every rule.
Every single rule.
Okay.
Then we can actually eliminate the possibility of false negatives within that group.
So by definition, if they're in the high group, they've met every single standard.
Exactly.
So there's no way
they could be non-compliant.
On a specific rule.
On a specific rule, right?
So that false negative cell.
That cell disappears.
It's gone.
But then
Table 13.
Talks about substantial compliance.
Right.
And how including that in our definition of the high performing group can reintroduce that possibility of false negatives.
So now, instead of full compliance, it's substantial compliance.
Substantial, meaning they've met most of the rules.
Most, but not all.
But not necessarily all.
And it's possible that they could still be non-compliant.
On a specific rule, even though they're in that high-performing category.
So that reintroduces that false negative.
It reintroduces the potential for a false negative.
And I guess the research mentions that there are ways to,
there are mathematical ways.
To kind of adjust for that.
To account for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Tables 14, 15, and 16 kind of show some really interesting scenarios.
They do. They highlight the analytical power of the DMM.
Okay.
So, for example, Table 14 shows what they call difficult rules.
Difficult rules.
That even the high-performing programs struggle with.
So everybody has a hard time with these.
Everyone has a hard time.
Okay.
And then Table 15 shows a situation where most of the programs end up in that low-performing group.
So you've got mostly poor-performing programs?
Mostly poor-performing programs, yeah.
Okay.
And then Table 16 shows a really interesting scenario
with
what they call a terrible rule.
Terrible rule.
Where the rule actually seems to predict the opposite of what we would expect.
So it's like a backward rule.
It's almost like a backward rule. Okay. And I think what these tables really illustrate is that they provide a structured way to use data to assess how effective our regulations are and to identify areas where we might need to revise those rules or maybe provide more targeted support.
To the programs, right.
So like if we're seeing a difficult rule that everyone's having a hard time with, maybe the rule is just...
Maybe the rule needs to be rewritten.
Mm. It's unclear, it's unrealistic.
Right, or if it's a terrible rule.
Yeah.
Where it's actually leading to worse outcomes.
Right.
That definitely needs to be reevaluated.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's a really crucial insight here,
mm-hmm.
is that sometimes our assumptions about what constitutes a good rule can be totally wrong.
Can be totally wrong.
And if we're just relying on intuition,
yeah,
you know, we can be led astray.
Right.
And this really highlights the need for data-driven evaluation.
Right. Not just in...
Not just in licensing.
Not just in licensing.
But in any field where we're establishing standards.
Right.
You know, we need to look at the data and see if what we're doing is actually working.
Absolutely. So bringing all of this together, what are the core takeaways here?
I think the UCM offers a really valuable framework for assessing how effective our licensing decisions are.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a clear method
for
identifying and addressing both false positives and, crucially, false negatives, which ultimately means
better protection for the people.
Better protection for the people receiving those services.
Right, the clients.
The clients. And it also gives us a way to look at how consistent
and
unbiased our inspectors are.
It helps us identify inconsistencies and potential biases.
And it sounds like this isn't just like a theoretical exercise.
No.
Like we can actually take...
We can apply the UCM to existing data on regulatory compliance.
Right.
And that can help us uncover these hidden biases.
Hidden biases.
And provide licensing administrators with really powerful insights for making improvements at the system level.
Right. Like if we see a pattern of a certain type of bias, then maybe we can implement
new training programs?
Training programs or adjust how...
Adjust the assessment method.
The assessments are done.
Exactly.
And it also helps us...
And it can help us evaluate the impact...
Of specific rules and regulations.
Yeah, so it's a pretty powerful tool.
It is.
But, you know, the research itself acknowledges that...
There is one major limitation.
There's a limitation at this point.
Which is that the UCM is still primarily a theoretical model.
Right. It hasn't been tested.
It hasn't been widely tested or validated.
In the real world.
In real world settings.
So I guess the next step.
The next logical step is to put it to the test.
Put it to the test, see if it works.
See if it works, yeah.
And see if it can be applied.
And see if it's applicable in other fields.
In other fields.
Beyond just licensing.
And they even mentioned...
They give the example of clinical drug trials.
Drug trials, right.
We're accurately identifying potential side effects.
Right. Avoiding those false negatives.
Avoiding those false negatives.
It's so important.
It's absolutely critical.
So there's a lot of potential here.
There is.
Well, this has been a really interesting deep dive into the uncertainty matrix.
It has.
And I think, you know, it's really fascinating to see how this kind of structured approach to decision making can bring a lot of clarity and accountability.
Absolutely.
To something as complex as human services licensing.
Yeah.
And even beyond that.
Then beyond that.
To any situation where we're making those critical yes or no calls.
Right, exactly. And ultimately, it's all about ensuring that our regulatory processes are more reliable and valid.
Right.
Which means better protection for the people who need those services.
And so I guess for our listeners out there, here's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
How might this idea...
Yeah.
Of identifying certainty and uncertainty in these binary decisions apply to other areas of your life or work.
Right. What are the potential false negatives?
Yeah. What are we overlooking?
That we might be missing.
Expert speaker.